I'm James Brierton. It's Wednesday, October 11th, 2023. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Fall foliage. And welcome to a live edition of the Carolina Weather Group, streaming to you on this Wednesday, October 11th, 2023. I'm James Brierton in Charlotte, joined by Frank Strait in Columbia. And ladies and gentlemen, Evan Fisher is back joining us tonight from Chapel Hill.
Woo-hoo!
Yay! Evan, it is the most wonderful time of the year.
It is.
And I don't know how many people realize this or not, but I'm pretty sure you are on every newscast, every hour of every day, because I look up at the 5 o'clock hour. And everyone's doing their weather forecast and everyone's checking in on the latest fall colors. And there it is. Explorefall.com. The man, yes, myth and the legend behind explorefall.com with us tonight. I don't know if you knew that you were the most famous person in all of the Carolinas.
This right is the first now. I'm hearing of it. It's news to me.
There you go. I'm in a chat group with a lot of other broadcast meteorologists. And just yesterday, one person said, where do I get fall leaves? And then like six people said, Evan Fisher. So
awesome. Like,
yeah, it was very exciting. So tell us, Evan, all about Explore Fall. I understand from your pre-show tweet that you are very excited, as we all know, about Western North Carolina mountains. But I think you also said the leaves are a little behind schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. So Explore Fall, I hatched this idea last fall, 2022, to create a new agey kind of fall foliage map. Basically, I noticed that the fall foliage maps that are available on the internet are rather subpar. They often are on the county scale, and fall foliage changes, you know, according to local elevation changes and local variations in temperature. So there was a need for more high resolution fall foliage reporting. So thus, Explore Fall was born. I spent the last year coding up a fall foliage model using some statistical methods. And the long and short of it is now, September 1st, just a month ago, I launched that. And the map has done well. It seems to be verifying very well across the country with the most recent trends, as well as the next 10-day forecast. But as you said, James, we are currently seeing that delayed fall color in Western North Carolina, and the model seems to be picking up on that as well. So it's really good to see the boots on the ground reports lining up with the fall foliage map on the website.
How do you get those boots on the ground reports, Evan? Because I think the most characteristic thing about the map that I love so much is the high resolution data set that it provides.
Yeah, so we're lucky just to have a lot of people who also love fall, people that go out there and take pictures and send them in to us, you know, whether that be on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram. We're getting all these different reports, and the advantage of those is they help us verify. So those individual reports don't actually go into the model itself. The model is all weather data, the number of sunlight hours in the day, that kind of information. It doesn't actually ingest any reports, but I take those reports and kind of compare them to the current map to see where we might need to make adjustments or apply some fudge factors.
Did you say fudge factors?
Fudge factors. Yeah, the model isn't perfect. And sometimes I have to say, well, that needs to be 30% faster with the color change and just slap on a 30% change onto the model. It happens.
Okay. All right. We're filling in some holes. So how can people get you data if they're looking out their window and they live in the mountains?
Yeah, so if you want to send data in to help with this mission, Twitter is really the best way that we get this stuff. We also have a portal on the website. I don't have the exact link right now, but it has a fall foliage like photo submission. But Twitter or email evan@explorefall.com, that's the best way. And we'll see them. We do get a lot of reports. So every once in a while, something may miss us. So if I don't see it, like it, and respond to it, just tag us again, and I'd be happy to circle around and see that report. Generally, the reports are lining up really well with the map, but we have had a couple of spots across the country this year that have been challenging, and those reports have been vital for correcting any inherent errors.
I'm playing some video. This is archived video. So what is it looking like right now in the fall, Evan? Is it anything like this file photos we have playing here?
So there's one spot in Western North Carolina that currently looks like that. That is Highway 215 in southwestern North Carolina, close to where it intersects the Blue Ridge Parkway. That's really the only place where we currently have those bright yellows peaking in a bit of a widespread sense. You know, the more classic early season fall foliage spots like Grandfather Mountain are actually 1 to 2 weeks delayed. And those boots on the ground reports have been valuable for helping us understand that it's honestly still very green across much of western North Carolina, outside of that one little pocket of color on Highway 215.
Let's go ahead and pop the map up here. Here's the website. It is explorefall.com, and it is accessible to you and everyone, whether you're planning a trip for your family or you run a business up there and you're dependent on this tourism, which we'll talk about in a moment. But let's just zoom into the Carolinas. So let's move outside the mountains for a moment, because that's where a lot of the focal attention is. But according to your map, Evan, that we're beginning to see low color or some trickling of colors in Hickory, maybe upstate South Carolina, Rock Hill area, Greensboro, North Carolina, making its way into the Triangle. So how is that pacing? Is that normal for this time of year?
Yeah, it's roughly normal. I was just driving down the road the other day here in Chapel Hill and thought to myself, wow, that kind of looks like low color, and pulled up the map. And sure enough, that low color had just moved in. So I do think that's verifying well across much of the Piedmont of North Carolina and getting down into, I've even seen a few reports from the Midlands of South Carolina of some early color showing up. It's certainly not widespread by any means in the flatlands, but it's nice to see that early season color. It gets everyone excited. And these recent cool days have been a real treat this early in October.
Yeah, I'm beginning to notice here in the Charlotte area, I would say some of the trees that are maybe most susceptible to either drought conditions because it's been very dry, or some of the cold snaps. So we did get down into the 40s the other night. Those have begun to churn, but not a whole lot. I think it's the most vulnerable trees. I don't know if you're an arborist by trade here, but I do know that different trees change at different paces and different timings.
Yeah, absolutely. So I often call them parking lot maples, because 9 times out of 10, when people submit an early season fall color report, it's a picture of a maple in a parking lot that's red in August. These are the trees that they get stressed out because of the, you know, land use around the tree. There might be a lot of asphalt. It may not be getting enough moisture. And those maples are particularly susceptible to changing early as the chlorophyll production shuts down and those reds begin to emerge in the leaves.
Frank, do you have any parking lot trees that are changing colors in Columbia?
Not a whole lot. Most of the ones I've seen are actually starting to lose their leaves now. It's been pretty dry here for a few weeks, maybe longer. So I'm not really seeing a whole lot of color. I've noticed some leaves starting to come down already.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Devin.
No, I'm familiar with that. I've heard that as well from across the Carolinas. James, you mentioned a minute ago that we've got drought, and Frank, you said the same. The drought is not good for fall foliage. Just a tiny bit of dryness can be good for improving the colors, but overall, you don't want to see it. And I've definitely seen a few other reports of trees kind of skipping the color phase and shedding mm-hmm. some of those early season leaves because of that extra stress.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and pop up here on the screen real fast. This is the drought monitor, which is updated on Thursday. So we're due to get another one tomorrow, or if you're listening to our audio podcast, there'll probably be one out by the time you get this. And last week, we began to see more of that abnormally dry, even some moderate drought conditions moving into portions of the Carolinas. So that's what I was going to ask you, Evan, is the fall colors this year going to be impacted by what seems to be this growing drought, or would it have been a problem if we had had a drought over the summer, which was fairly moist?
Yeah, you know, I like you mentioned, I tweeted before the show that I was very optimistic about fall foliage in Western North Carolina. And I think that goes for down into the foothills as well, maybe portions of the Piedmont. If this drought were worse, I would be very concerned. But at the moment, the pictures I've seen from Western North Carolina, I keep focusing on that area just because it's the only spot that has that fall color.
That's where it starts.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But the pictures I've seen so far are encouraging. Some of the color is really quite bright. You know, last year was arguably the best fall foliage year in about a decade, maybe 15 years across the Carolinas. So it's going to be hard to live up to the vibrancy of 2022. But with this color that I'm seeing, I'm not saying we're going to get another 2022, but I do think that the recent conditions and the forecast over the next 10 days are really setting up for a great color season, especially Western North Carolina. We'll see about the Piedmont. It's a little bit harder to forecast vibrancy out there. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I think we're looking forward to end of October, beginning of November, which is the typical window for us. And we'll get a better pacing as this all plays along. Probably worth mentioning, we might actually get some of our first measurable rain over the course of the next few days or so. But we'll have to make sure we don't get too much wind, because I think that would also kind of knock down some of those leaves, as I understand it. But I will take the free watering of my grass and garden, so long as it continues to hang on here into mid-October.
Yeah, that wind is really important to keep an eye on. You know, I think you're probably safe down in Charlotte and Columbia. The areas that haven't started to turn too much are generally safe from those higher winds, unless there's drought. So, you know, Frank's report from Columbia makes it sound like some trees may be susceptible to that wind because of the drought. But for the most part, that's probably just a concern up in the mountains where that moderate color is starting to settle in. Once trees reach moderate, that's generally when their leaves are susceptible to early drop and unfortunately premature past peak color. But I'm hopeful. I think we're still set up great for this next upcoming week.
Well, you mentioned that user reports are what helps drive the explorefall.com map. And so if you're watching with us tonight, or you're watching back on YouTube and you have a report to share, we want to know, while Evan's here, let us know where you are and what you are seeing, not only in the Carolinas, but you guys are doing like the whole country. Is that right, Evan?
We are, yes. Every square inch of the lower 48, hopefully at Alaska next year, but we'll see.
I feel like this is like a I knew you when moment, because you would come on, right? You would always on the Carolina Weather Group. We were just talking Mount Mitchell, right? Mm-hmm. Getting real cold. How cold did it get earlier in this week? I feel like that's something I can put you on the spot and you know.
24, I think that was the lowest temperature I saw in Mitchell.
It's fall is here. And then, you know, we went from relying on you for our Blue Ridge Mountains. Now you're doing 48 states and coming soon, Alaska, it sounds like. That's just wild. How did you get into all of this, Evan? I mean, you're from outside of Asheville, but like, why leaves? Why mountains? Why now?
Yeah, that's a question I've been asked a lot this season, and I'm not certain I can answer it perfectly, but as best I can understand, I fell in love with it because it's this really interesting interplay between meteorology and GIS, which are my two passions. You know, this gives me an opportunity to do some really unique research. Scientists don't understand the science behind fall foliage all that well. So there's this whole niche here that I can get involved in and use my, you know, my background of the meteorology degree and combine that with all of my the GIS stuff that I'm doing nowadays to really carve out my own spot in the weather fall foliage science world, I guess you could say. And I am from Asheville. I love fall. I've always been an outdoorsy guy. And I would say that if I didn't become a meteorologist, I may have gotten into the forestry side of things. So this also helps to scratch that itch. Now that I live in Chapel Hill, I'm not in the mountains, but I still get to connect with that fall foliage on a daily basis.
It makes me feel like this is your way of connecting back to the mountains from afar.
Yes, absolutely. And sometimes it's a teaser and it leads to a twinge of jealousy on my part. I'm learning to control that. But yes, it is so wonderful to see those reports. And I do feel like I'm there oftentimes. And our friend Tim Buckley shared some pictures today. And I really felt like I was, there you go. I really felt like I was standing on the Blue Ridge Parkway out there towards Rough Ridge and taking that picture myself. It's just beautiful. So I'm thankful for those reports.
Yeah, but I think the jealousy is going to hit you this weekend when they get their first good wind event and it's down around freezing and maybe there's a few flakes in the air above 4,000 feet.
I've done my best to completely ignore that forecast. So far, right? I did pull a sounding earlier this evening and saw that there was going to be some northwest flow, snow showers and high elevations, and just had to resign myself to accept it. It's okay.
I was trying to search for, and I'll have to try to find in a minute, the video you recorded a couple years back where you're up near like Roan Mountain and the absolute frigid, dark temperatures, and you're just holding onto your phone trying to record a video before the battery dies. Like, that is forever implanted in my brain as Evan Fisher.
Yes, and that will be me again. Don't worry, I'll make it back to the mountains before too much longer. This winter, though, it'll be few and far between. I do have a trip planned, 2 weeks, so I think it's probably the busiest fall foliage weekend for Western North Carolina, that October 21st, 22nd timeframe. That's when I think the colors will be really great up there, and I'll be making my own trip to go drive the Blue Ridge Parkway, or at least drive in the back of some long line of cars and admire the colors.
Wait, exactly. For the colors. Frank, do you make it up to the Blue Ridge, or do you guys do something else in South Carolina for the colors?
I'm not the biggest into the leaf looking thing, so I don't often do that kind of trip. But there are a lot of people who do. I know that actually we in the climate office, we're going to be visiting NCEI in Asheville in a couple of weeks. So we will be making a trip up to Asheville. It looks like there will be peak color during that time. So there should be some nice views.
Yeah, I'll call that a peak fall foliage trip for sure.
Something Frank just said made me think of what I think is the worst term for this. Like you hear fall colors, fall foliage, but like leaf peaking or leaf peeping, yeah. I think is the worst because it just makes me think of Peeping Tom.
Yes.
Right. That's kind of a derogatory term that I used to all the people that would flock to central Pennsylvania when I lived up there because they tended to be annoying. They would drive really slow because they're looking at the leaves instead of the road.
Yes.
That really gets on my nerves.
Drive. Well, let me ask you about annoying tourists, Evan, because some of your clientele who use your data probably would not call them annoying tourists, because in addition to weekenders and broadcasters, there's whole industries that are built around these beautiful colors. And I imagine your data is helpful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's an avenue that we wanted to explore a lot this this season. Unfortunately, we've just been so crazy. We haven't had an opportunity to connect individually with too many local tourism companies. But moving forward, absolutely. You know, this kind of data can really help connect people who are coming in from out of town with a local TDA that can really, you know, give them an idea of what the best spots are in a county where they should go hike and where they should best allocate their resources. So this is it's a new product. We've never had something like this on the internet before. So I'm hopeful that a few TDAs have noticed it this year and they're able to pass it along to the tourists that are coming to their area to make their experience better.
Yeah, the fact that I think every TV station is using your data set spoke to the void that like you just pounced on.
There is, it's a crazy, crazy niche. I keep saying that throughout the season. I feel like I'm beating a dead horse at this point, but it is wild to me how for the past 10 years and longer, there hasn't been a reliable daily updated fall foliage map that you can get your hands on. This is an industry that does anywhere from $10 to $30 billion worth of revenue each fall. So there's clearly demand. Why hasn't a map like this existed before? I don't know. I think I just got lucky and had an idea, but I really am glad that I'm getting some wonderful feedback and people are enjoying it and finding it useful. That makes me happy that I didn't waste the last year of my life developing something for nothing. It's just great.
Can you tell us at all what went into the development of it? What did you have to build?
Yeah. So a lot of frustration went into it. I think I ended up, everything's coded up in Python. That's my language of choice. And I decided to avoid all of academia while creating this because I knew I wanted to go the business route and I didn't want to accidentally encroach on someone's own research and then steal it and use it for my own profit. So I did all of my own research here, tried and failed a lot. I probably scrapped at least 30, maybe 40 fall foliage models over the past year. But by June or so of this year, I finally had a model that I felt worked pretty well. Through that trial and error, I got to that point. And now it's, I think they wrote something like 50,000 lines worth of fall foliage worth of code just to get this thing up and running.
You wrote it or ChatGPT wrote it?
I wrote it. ChatGPT with it. They're going to steal my intellectual property. Now the website, that's a different story. I'm not a web developer. So ChatGPT has definitely written a lot of JavaScript for me in the past couple of months.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but this is the happy side, the upside to fall. But I'm sitting here holding a hot drink and I got a cough drop and I keep muting because every 5 seconds I'm hacking here.
That was me last week.
I was going to say, I know I'm not alone.
Yeah. It's those allergies. The fall flowers are beautiful. You know, we don't talk about that too often, but the wildflower season across the Carolinas is awesome in September and October. I've seen a lot of beautiful colors here, even in Chapel Hill. But yeah, that does take its revenge, not only as cold season sets in, but also as that fall pollen allergy season sets in. It's a tough time of the year to be outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Evan, we talked about it a little bit already, I guess, but since we've gone into the details of the model, I'm curious what things you consider for fall foliage. I mean, I know there's the climatology for it, and temperatures are important, and rainfall. Any other things that really matter?
Yeah, so I focus, like you said, the temperature is probably the most important thing for the model that I run. I also have a precipitation module that analyzes, precipitation is really complicated when it comes to fall color and the timing of fall color. But it takes a bunch of things into consideration and makes a best guess. I also have a factor for the number of hours in the day. So obviously the days get shorter further north, and that kind of accompanies those earlier colors. But that varies, the impacts of that seem to vary across the country from north to south. That's been kind of some interesting findings as I've gone throughout this whole model. You know, there should also be modules for wind and heavy rain. Those are important things that can knock down leaves once they get towards that high to peak color. Unfortunately, I don't have that active at the moment. It's a little more complicated than I had time to develop in the past year. But for fall 2024, there'll definitely be some live modules for those conditions. Aside from that, temperature, rain, wind, those are kind of the big ones and day length.
What I love about it is we know we always feel this way, but I'm always trying to maybe convince other people that weather intersects like everything.
Yes.
Last week we were at Charlotte Motor Speedway talking about NASCAR and how weather impacts that. Now we're talking mm-hmm. about how NASCAR, you know, how weather impacts the fall foliage. And it's just like it's layered in everywhere all around us.
Oh, absolutely. Intersects yep. every corner of society. And I think this is one that is more impacted than most, to be honest. I mean, fall foliage in North Carolina can vary from by up to a month, year to year. And that's really tough for a place like that relies on fall foliage tourism. A lot of local businesses need that tourism in the fall, especially in October in the mountains. So being able to accurately analyze and predict that color is super important. And all of that is just meteorology behind the scenes.
We've had record-breaking warm months and seasons, temperature being such an important factor in here. Are you seeing, Evan, as you track this year after year, that the timeline slips a little bit as summer seems to last a little bit longer?
Yes, although I'm not exactly sure how statistically significant that is. So I created, with this fall foliage model, I created a fall foliage archive of daily conditions back to 1991. It's been really fun to create and play with, but I wouldn't call it research quality quite yet. All that being said, I did take some time to essentially plot the average timing of peak fall color across the United States from 1991 to 2021, I believe. And there was definitely a trend with that, where fall colors have been getting later in the most recent seasons. Whether or not that's actually happening, I don't have any proof for that yet. I need some on the ground reports and actual observations. I can't prove that with just this statistical data set.
Okay. Fair enough. We'll keep a watch on it. I had a couple other space headlines before we go, but Evan, anything else you could think of to share? Actually, I was going to ask this. You said you got a lot of feedback from all around the country. Any surprising feedback that you weren't expecting that sticks out of your mind?
Yes. So I would say, I don't know why, but the Lower Peninsula of Michigan is apparently our arch nemesis. We cannot get the Lower Peninsula right. So I apologize to the one Lower Peninsula watcher who may stumble on this video. Other than that, everything has generally been as expected. It's been a good season. I've learned a lot of things, and we definitely have some ideas that we'll carry into next season to make ourselves even better. But for the most part, no shocking surprises outside of Michigan. I'm thankful for that.
What I'm hearing is a road trip to Michigan.
You can go for it, but you may just find green. I'm not sure.
Oh, I thought you were going to come with me. It's just going to be me? Okay.
I will always drive for fall foliage. Never stop chasing leaf peeping edition. Sorry.
Hashtag leaf peeping. Yeah. In just a few minutes, we have a couple more space headlines we want to bring you before we wrap up this edition of the Carolina Weather Group. But first, let's go down to Frank in Columbia. Frank, we talked about some of the rain that's finally moving in, and how much rain can we really expect here?
Well, parts of South Carolina are going to see a pretty good soaking from the storm that's right now over the Gulf of Mexico and tracking eastward toward Florida. Florida gets some actual severe weather out of it. Not a surprise when there's an El Nino going on. That's something they'll have to get used to. But further north, just some steady rain across the Carolinas, heaviest in the low country of South Carolina. You're looking at the satellite picture here showing those thunderstorms erupting over the Gulf of Mexico and some clouds blossoming into the Carolinas as well. Here's what a radar composite looks like. These graphics coming from the University of Wisconsin, which is a really good place to look at satellite data and these radar composites that they create. And a lot of South Carolina covered with rain already, starting to spread in North Carolina as well. But South Carolina gets the most of it, and we certainly need it. As I mentioned, it's been dry lately. Some of that dryness extends into North Carolina too, and it's having some impact on Evan's forecast. Well, let's see how things go from here. We'll jump ahead to tomorrow morning. This is GFS model showing that storm by this point centered east of St. Simons Island, Georgia, heading east. It looks like a band of heavy rain will be over South Carolina at that time, with the rain extending north into North Carolina, but not all the way up to the Virginia line here. So there's some areas that will not see much, if any, rain in North Carolina from this storm. Again, South Carolina is the main focus with this one. Now it moves on, and it looks though conditions improve during the day Thursday, but into Friday, a warm front lifts northward and a little bit of lingering tropical moisture as well. A lot of the moisture that we're dealing with now, I meant to mention, comes from East Pacific storms. There was Tropical Storm Max and a Hurricane Lydia out there that have moved across Mexico, and that's one of the sources for the moisture that that's providing us the rain that we're getting tonight and tomorrow morning. Well, some of that does linger into Friday, and there will be a warm front lifting northward at that point. So that gives us a little bit of rain later Friday into Friday night across both Carolinas, but this time not a heavy rain event. Behind that, a cold front pushes through, and that dries us out for the most part over the weekend. But as you heard us allude to earlier, some northwest flow is going to settle in. I guess this is the first time this year for western North Carolina seeing some sprinkles and potentially even some flurries. If you get high enough, I think you have to be at least 4,000 feet, maybe even higher than that, to see the flakes flying. But I think that will be happening. Pretty windy up there too, and kind of blustery across the Carolinas into Sunday and even Monday. And again, cool as well. This is a pretty cool air mass, almost as cool as the last one we had come through this past weekend. But that only holds on for a while. The first part of next week, we should see a gradual warming trend, though temperatures will stay on the cool side even through the middle of next week, James.
Thank you, Frank. I was enjoying a cough drop while you were breaking us through the forecast. So that was a, a nice little helpful interlude.
Happy to be of service, James.
Now I'm going to try to talk with it in my mouth and see how well that goes. I do want to let Alex, who's watching on both Facebook and YouTube, know tonight. Scotty is fine. Scotty's safe. He's not with us tonight. I did see him last week in the flesh, which is always exciting to do as we do these shows virtually all so often. But I did want to make sure I turned everyone's microphones and cameras back on, because I wanted to take us through a little space news. And I wanted to first get your reaction, guys, to this video that NASA put out. Take a look at these guys. Look at this very dramatic video. NASA is set to reveal the samples from the asteroid Bennu as a part of the OSIRIS-REx mission, which, as you'll remember, launched in 2016, took several years to get there. They crashed. They didn't really crash. They dug into Bennu in 2020 and then took several years back. We had live coverage of their return right here on the Carolina Weather Group just a few weeks ago with Candace Jordan and Tony Rice. Well, today they did actually open up that canister. And what we found inside was a sample that I will describe for our audio podcast listeners as kind of like a charcoal coal looking substance. And they did find minerals that support carbon and water. And this is all a mission to help us understand how life came to be, how planets came to form, as we tried to understand the answer to the universe.
Why is carbon so important? Well, carbon is essential for all life on Earth. We are all carbon-based. Carbon forms bonds with hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and the sulfur to form prebiotic and biological compounds that are important, amino acids that are part of our proteins and enzymes. We even look for nucleobases, components of the genetic code in DNA and RNA. So exciting stuff. And one of the reasons we want to look for this material in these samples is to understand whether asteroids like Bennu, could have not only delivered the water that led to our oceans, but actually seed the earth with prebiotic chemicals, right? The building blocks of life. And this is the part I just find really exciting. So
I learned a new term, guys, and we are in the asteroid autumn, or maybe it was autumn asteroid. Did you know this, Evan? Your face says no.
I did not. I might have to incorporate
this. You
didn't
have a projection model for the asteroids.
Yeah.
Well, because we just got the samples back from Bennu as a part of OSIRIS-REx. Well, there's another mission. It's called the Psyche mission, and it's going to go to the asteroid named Psyche. And it is all about trying to understand how the Earth and how life came to be by looking at these asteroids, because as we're beginning to connect the dots here, they're a good way to help us understand how the early universe was formed and even see things that we can't see for ourselves. So it is now slated for Friday. It was slated for tomorrow, Thursday, from Kennedy in Florida for a launch. But as Frank was just alluding to, there's a tad bit too much rain in the forecast. So now they're hoping SpaceX will launch this bad boy on Friday. And I got a chance today to talk to Mark Brown from JPL to understand a little bit more about why we need to go to this asteroid to get even more answers. Take a listen.
It is what's called an M class, M as in metallic class asteroid. We believe that it is largely made up of iron and nickel. And that is unlike the rocky asteroids, the carbonaceous asteroids that have been studied by other missions. This will truly be a first of its kind to get images of. I mean, when you see this body, it will look different than anything you've ever seen before.
What can we learn from this asteroid that we couldn't learn from visiting any other asteroid?
One of the leading formation theories on this asteroid is that it used to be a larger planetesimal, still a small planet, but a larger planetesimal that had its mantle stripped off by a bunch of violent collisions. And that what we're looking at is the exposed core of what used to be something bigger. And if that's true, humankind has never seen a core before. We have never seen the Earth's core. We can't get to the Earth's core with science instruments. So seeing this core will allow us to do a lot of complementary comparative geology with the Earth's core.
I've always wanted to ask somebody like yourself, how do you get the patience to wait until 2029 to see the fruits from all your labor?
I'm a spacecraft builder. There are different specialties that are pilots or drivers. You might think of an analogy to race car world. There are race car drivers and there are race car builders. Okay. I'm a builder. I will not be waiting 6 years for the data from this asteroid. I will be moving on and building something else. Okay. Now, if you're a scientist, typically what you're doing in the meantime is you're looking at the data from the mission that you launched 10 years ago that's now arriving at where it's arriving at. So people build careers out of this staggered launching, operating, getting data back. I mean, that's what we do.
And so that launch is now slated for Friday, guys, and counting. Frank, what's the cat's name again? I forget.
Stormy.
Stormy. I knew it was something weather related. So hopefully we'll see that launch on Friday. But I still think the funniest thing was the choice of B-roll that they shot with these two. It looks like something out of like X-Files, like the smoke and the container. And if you're listening on the audio podcast, just go check it out. I don't think that was the actual sample in that actual shop. That just cracked me up as I was putting the files together. One last piece of business before we go, guys. This goes to all of our folks who recently subscribed to us on YouTube because they like so much what we were doing with Crew 6 and Crew 7 launches. We have been informed by the people over at the Tube that we shall not live stream any of the launches unless we're giving commentary live time to those feeds, which is to say that we won't have live coverage of the Psyche launch on Friday in the middle of the workday. But we're going to continue to strive to try to bring you live coverage of space events whenever we can, like we did with the OSIRIS-REx landing. And so look for those live commentary events as often as we can. We liked to supplement with live feeds of all of the happenings whenever we could, if we weren't around. But we've been told not to do that. And as part of trying to get the message across, YouTube has decided that all of our shows for the next 90 some odd days will be commercial free, if you pick up what I'm putting down. And so I wanted to take the opportunity right now to thank all of you who have joined us over at patreon.com/Carolina Weather Group, because that is a very reliable form of income for us. And by income, I don't mean that it's lining the pockets of James, Evan, and Frank. I mean, it's going to paying for our Zoom subscription and our Restream subscription and our website subscription and things along those lines. So if you haven't already, check out patreon.com/Carolina Weather Group, starting at just a dollar. And there is still time to get on there, because on Halloween, I'm going to randomly poll a patron to win a goodie bag of Carolina Weather Group swag. So by joining us on Patreon, as Carrie did in the past week, and as Art has done in the past month, you're eligible for that drawing. If you decide you don't want to wait for that drawing and you just want to go and pick out your favorite color hat right now, or you want to buy some swag for your loved one for the holiday season, you can always head on over to our merch store by scanning the QR code that's on your screen and not the one that's listed on our YouTube channel, because that too has disappeared for the next I don't know how long. So thank you to all of you who have chosen to support us. If you can, we appreciate it. We're just trying to pay the few bills around here to keep these lights on. And that's my
feed storming.
Hopefully that's not my rant, but that's my piece of transparency.
No feeding of cats comes from Patreon servers. Green screens
behind Frank. He already had a great microphone, because the man's got a great radio career. But I think you got lights. I got lights. You got lights.
I already had lights.
You already had lights. Okay.
Yeah.
So we lit some people so that you could see them a little bit better. Little things like that, that just hopefully go to making the show more enjoyable to watch and listen to by making it easier to see and hear it. That is what Patreon does. And that's what our merch store does. So we appreciate all of you who have been able to support us. We do appreciate that. In the meanwhile, I guess enjoy the show ad free. Wasn't my business decision. Evan's making YouTube videos. You can go check out his videos. What's up, Evan?
I see. No, it's just one.
Just one.
I'm paying for a second video this weekend, but yeah, it's fledgling.
I thought it was good. I liked it.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Anybody have any other closing thoughts? We did get a question from Alex earlier in the show. Where is Scotty? Scotty says, I just got home a bit ago, was out longer than I expected. I don't think he meant for me to read that on the air, but I did. I don't know where he was, but based on a tweet that he sent, it sounds like he was in a Chick-fil-A drive-through line, because his tweet read, I don't know what's worse, Chick-fil-A drive-through line or Atlanta rush hour traffic. So that's where I think he was, Alex.
Columbia Harbison Boulevard Chick-fil-A traffic, it's definitely worse than Atlanta rush hour.
It's worse. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, you look scarred.
What about a Chick-fil-A at rush hour in Atlanta? Yeah.
Ooh. Yeah, you got a point. That's probably worse.
That's probably worse.
Yeah.
To recap, Blue Ridge Parkway, fall colors, explorefall.com.
Perfect.
Those are the three. Are there Chick-fil-A's near the Blue Ridge? I'm sure there are near the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Maybe
that's where you need Chick-fil-A's. Yeah.
Yes, true. We'll work on it.
Well, Evan, it's good to see you. Good luck with your studies. Thanks for filling this void that we all clearly needed in our lives. Frank, I'm glad you're feeling better. And I'm glad I am too.
With it. Well, I hope you're feeling better soon, James.
Well, check in with me next week. Good night, everybody.
Hey.